your new best friends. You're gonna find the book you love to pieces. The girl behind the counter recommends dollar books and shelves of graphic novels. Titles old and new, you'll find them all. With action figures, board games, toys, and models to add to your new Comic Wednesday haul. The Comic Book Store, the Comic Book Store. Cause that's where the books live, but it's also much more. It's the heart of the Arborn that we all adore. Your friendly neighborhood Comic Book Store.
Ah, yes, now we're back in the Comic Book Store. This is Source Material Live. I'm your host, the Mandated Reporter, and frankly, I'm mortified, Mr. Mark Rattledge. And this week, we're talking all things MODOK, or at the very least, Hulu's MODOK, brought to you by Patton Oswalt. And on this particular show, we are talking about a companion piece, a four-issue limited series called MODOK Head Games that was written by Jordan Blum and comedian Patton Oswalt. Here to help me do that is Alexis Haina. How do you do, madam?
Well, it's too early to talk comics. I want to go back to bed.
Are we up late making MODOK jewelry, MODOK bracelets, MODOK barrettes, MODOK necklaces?
Actually, I was up late last night finishing Lucifer for another episode that we're going to be recording soon. Plug, plug. And also filling out receipts.
Ah, okay. So when can we expect the line of MODOK jewelry?
I'll get back to you on that.
not a lot of call for, it's right there between the Disney Princess stuff and Dragon Slayer. Right in between, there's MODOK.
Dragon Slayer, what?
Demon Slayer.
I was about to tell you that.
Thank you.
Nothing like recording a show and you're getting fact-checked by your kids.
Yeah, they're home for the summer. They're fantastic. Anyway. all right, so, yeah, we are... So, Jordan Blum and Patton Oswalt are the showrunners on Marvel's MODOK on Hulu, which we'll talk about tomorrow. Today, we're talking about the book that they wrote. The first issue came out December of 2020, and it wrapped up a few months later. So let's get into it. The Comic Vine summary goes like this. Patton Oswalt and Jordan Blum, showrunners of the upcoming animated Marvel's MODOK show on Hulu, comes a journey into the mind of one of the biggest heads in the Marvel Universe. MODOK is the ruthless and brilliant leader of the terrorist organization AIM, outsmarting heroes and maneuvering his cutthroat colleagues gunning for his position. But when he begins to be haunted by memories of a family he never had, it leaves him unsure if he is losing his freakishly large mind, or if perhaps there is a lot more to this enormous mind, or if there is something more sinister behind these visions. So, this does... There are some similarities between the book and the show, but they are definitely not the same thing, and it's not the same story. So Monica, who is in the show, shows up in this comic as well. The family that he has in the show is in this, but it's a little bit different in that, as the summary said, they are visions in his mind. And the mystery is, are they real? Were they real? Are these memories, or is someone messing with his head, hence the head games? As we open up, we have Monica and MODOK raiding a Stark lab for technology, and what they say about AIM in the book is that what they do to fund their company is steal technology and then auction it off to other criminals to do their bidding here. So what did you think of this first little bit here? MODOK and Monica as sort of an oddball team teaming up to steal technology and then leading into this this meeting they have where AIM turns on MODOK and votes him out of the company.
Well, firstly, I do want to let our listeners know that if you want to read this, but you haven't had a chance to start watching the MODOK series yet, you don't have to worry, because while this does tie into the series, they are not directly correlated with one another, so you don't have to worry about, I don't know if I'll follow it. This is actually a really good story that you can follow whether or not you have actually started watching the series. If you have started watching it, there's, you'll still, I think you'll enjoy it just as much. But You know, I was just talking to Mark. I haven't had a chance to finish the MODOK series yet. I will be finishing it before we start talking about it on our next show. Again, plug. But thankfully, I was able to follow everything that was going on in this book, and it is quite funny. Especially, I'm still trying to figure out the logistics of this fight on the... It's like a lab that's in a train, and it's going vertical?
Yeah, I didn't really focus on that. Like, I saw it, and I was like, huh? But I figured it was, you know, we got to get the kids to the mall here. You know, the book is ostensibly about MODOK being ousted from AIM and MODOK getting revenge, but also having to deal with... I mean, the whole reason this comes about, sort of the inciting incident, is MODOK got distracted while robbing this vertical mountain train filled with Stark Tech. And he was distracted by these visions of Jody and his children. And so that's what leads Monica and the rest of AIM to say, hey, you're malfunctioning. There's something wrong with you. You're not dependable. You risked the mission, so we need to do away with you for a while. And MODOK is not one to be done away with so easily, which takes us through this issue into the next issue.
I do love this bit that, during where I guess it was like Monica's rambling, which probably took about 15 minutes telling AIM about this, MODOK essentially says, so while she's been talking, I just caused everyone's I rewrote the algorithms to pop your... It's like, in the interim that Monica spent lamenting, I used my computer brain to hack into 2,000 separate Braintronic laptops around the world, causing each one of them to overheat and explode in their users' laps. I'm guessing Braintronic is kind of a combination of the MacBook and the Samsung Galaxy.
It's just Bane, by the way, not Brain. I did that too, by the way.
Oh, you're right. Yeah. I then rewrote the algorithms to the popular social media sites, pushing the story to the top of every newsfeed, causing Bane's stock to instantly crash. Simultaneously, I created shell companies to buy thousands of shares of Bane's competitors' serval computers, which, due to speculation, tripled their stock price, allowing me to flip them, earning the exact amount lost during the heist with 12% interest. Tell me, Monica, what have you done to benefit AIM in the last 15 minutes?
You mentioned that this is a very funny book. This was my first big, like, laugh-out-loud moment. Like, I legitimately cracked up with this. And we've talked on various podcasts about what a big fan of Patton Oswalt I am. His humor, his style of humor, two things are very apparent while reading this. One, and I got more of it from this book than I did from watching the show, which we'll talk about tomorrow. He loves this character. There is something about this character that he, for whatever reason, has keyed into and identified with. And that love for this character is all over this book. And so between his passion and his genuine sense of humor, his ability to be funny, I had a great time reading this. And this was the first time, like I said before, that I laughed out loud a lot. This was the first time I cracked up.
Yeah, I love the henchman in the back who suddenly goes, "My mom uses a Bane book. I gotta go, or Bane book. I gotta go."
Yep. Which, by the way, the illustrator in this, there we go. Scott Hepburn. Great job with the art here.
Oh, absolutely. This book is so brightly colorful. The line work is great. You can tell, just get a really good... I've complained before in the past that sometimes it's kind of hard in certain books to tell which character is saying what, especially when you have a background or multiple characters focused at the same time. This book does a really good job of making sure that you know exactly who to focus on.
So,
I'd also like to add, it's a minor thing, but as we're going to find out later, there's a correlation for it. I love the use of hexagons and kind of like a beehive structure for so many elements. Again, it's not until the last issue that you realize why all of these, you know, that there's a real theme for all this coming together. But if you read it and you look back on, you go, they kind of, you know, planted those little clues here and there in various spots, and it's very impressive.
The other thing I really like about this, and you mentioned this before, we actually talked about this when we talked about MODOK Assassin on the day that MODOK came out on Hulu, is the change in the thought boxes. So we had talked about Modoc Assassin, that he will occasionally say a word or a phrase that's kind of like screaming or out of tone from what he had originally been saying, and it would be in a different font, sometimes a different color. Here, you're given the impression that there is another psyche, another personality sort of invading on his own, and so he's having a sort of a schizophrenic split personality thing going on, and that's illustrated by in the thought boxes where, you know, it's a yellow background with pink font, and then when this other personality comes in, it's a black background with white font in all capital letters. It looks pretty cool.
Yeah, and also really like that they go between what is clearly his inner dialogue and also what is his computer in a dialogue. So it's like, you know, you get the scene where he goes, "I was born out of betrayal and reborn many times in many forms." But above it, there's another box. It's the same color, but it's italicized, and it says computer, brain, calculating, searching, hard drives, volumes. So I like that you get the idea that it's like we're seeing both, you know, the human aspect and the computer aspect operating at the same time.
Mm-hmm. I'm wondering, without getting too much into tomorrow's podcast, I'm wondering how much of this they meant to be the Hulu show, but, you know, as projects often do, you know, they were like, we want more of a comedy. Like, this is funny, but I wouldn't necessarily call it a comedy. And I know you said you haven't seen all of it yet, but, like, this tells a very straightforward and interesting mystery story about his identity and his origins and all of that, which we'll get into shortly, you know, as we go through the book. Whereas the show is more slapsticky. It has, you know, it not just because of its claymation presentation, but it has that sort of irreverent robot chicken humor to it, which this mm-hmm. necessarily this is a different kind of humor. And so I sit back and I wonder if this may not have been the template for the show, and then the show went in another direction because, you know, studio notes and whatnot.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, let's face it, the show would not be nearly as funny if it was tackling a serious issues like this.
Right.
I mean, hell, I hate to say it. Part of me actually wonders how much of the book, of this book, Patton Oswalt actually got to write with them. You know, yeah. I mean, obviously his humor is all over this. But at the same time, it's like, did he really have the idea that the family were, you know, as we're going to find out, were, you know, basically malfunctions in his brain? Or was that the suggestion of the other writer to make this book more serious?
I could just imagine the pitch, you know, at Hulu or whatever, you know, or wherever they initially pitched the idea. You know, it was like, okay, so, you know, Modoc has a family, but is it a hallucination or is it real? And they were like, why don't you just make it real then? You know, Modoc with a family, that's hilarious. You know, yuck, yuck, yuck. So this goes on, and we get to see Jody and Lou, and this is right out of the show. And so Modoc says, so this is where you get the bit of them going, you're malfunctioning or whatever. And so Modoc first fights the AIM soldiers, and, you know, it's this, you know, the gruesome, over the top violence. He's just sawing through people. There's blood everywhere. I guess this is what the kids like in comics now.
Yeah, no kidding. This, everything just goes totally Sam Raimi on us for a split second.
Yep. And so Modoc, this is really funny, this next bit. So Modoc and Monica are in a fight, and she does something to him, and he sinks to several levels into the basement of the facility where the weapons are. And so he's got, like, the Fantastic Four robot, he's got this laser sword, he's got the Ant-Man helmet, he's got Star-Lord's gun and Captain America's shield and a bunch of Deadpool bombs.
Yeah. I didn't notice the Deadpool bombs actually until a few pages later when he activates them on one of the guards. And I was actually like, wait, is that what yep, it is. And then you go back and you see he had them the whole time.
Yep.
Whose laser sword? I mean, obviously it's a non-copyright infringing lightsaber, but I wonder whose that belongs to.
My first impulse is that it was the Ebony Blade, except that it's not black. So, you know, in the comic Vine thing, it actually doesn't reference it at all. It's, you know, it, Captain America's energy shield is referenced, Ant-Man's helmet, something, the element gun, but it doesn't say what the sword is. So he comes storming out of there. He knocks Monica over. Monica injects herself with a Hulk serum, so she gets a big-ass Hulk arm.
I love it. They call it the Banner Booster.
Yeah. They continue to fight some more. He makes a fast exit, blows up the facility, and this is where we get our stinger for the end. He shows up on Tony Stark's doorstep and says, "Hey, I need help." And in his mind, there's a picture of the family. It says, "So you're finally starting to listen." To be continued. Dun, dun, dun.
Oh, my God. That look on Tony's face when he, with the family hallucinating behind him. He's just, that is the ultimate WTF face.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I meant to ask you when we first started, like, yeah, I know you've only been reading comics for a couple of years now. Did you ever, how much Iron Man or MODOK did you run across in your comic reading, if any?
Not that much, honestly. Not gonna lie, I was never a huge fan of MODOK, and I hate to think part of that is because I remember seeing him when I was a kid and thinking he was just way too creepy looking.
Yeah, I mean, like, he would show up occasionally in, like, a Captain America book or Iron Man here and there, and I didn't actually read that much Iron Man, to be honest with you. But, mm-hmm. Yeah, I was, back when I was reading comics in junior high and high school, Captain America was, you know, was my jam, the Avengers and MODOK, which occasionally show up there. When I got back into comics a few years ago, and I think I talked about this on the MODOK Assassin show, he started showing up in the Hulk books, him and the Leader, and they were the intelligentsia, and they were actually the major, they were the big villains in a major Hulk crossover storyline that was like Fall of the Hulks, World War Hulks, and Hulked Out Heroes. And I thought they were great in that. If you ever have a chance, if you're into the Hulk at all, it's a good crossover to pick up the books for and read. I enjoyed the hell out of it.
All right, always a good recommendation. Cleo, back up.
All right, so we open with this one, and Hawkeye got a hot tip. So they've captured the Taskmaster and a bunch of AIM people. I was like, "Hey, where'd you get the hot tip from?" And he was like, "MODOK." And Hawkeye's like, "Hey, wait. Oh, poor Hawkeye." When he gets his own book, he's pretty cool, but and everyone else's book, he's always made to look like a putz. He's like, "I wanted to come up to the office," and Tony just hangs up on him. Definitely having some fun with our Avengers characters, Pat and Blumar. And so...
Imagine Jeremy Renner actually saying that to Robert Downey Jr. He's like, "Come on, man, I've always wanted to come up there." This is my first favorite line in the whole series. Like, "Of course, Richards gets Doom and I get a murderous Funko Pop."
Yeah, I laughed hard at that. Funny you mention it.
I did too.
And so he's got MODOK on the operating table, and he figured out that there's a piece of technology that is broken, and he has a machine that can fix it, but that machine was stolen in the first issue, and so MODOK says, "I know where it's going to be. It's going to be at an auction in Vegas, Vegas, where all the conventions are, the Consumer Electronics Services Convention, right across the way, usually at the same time as the porn convention, the AVN Awards. So, you know, Vegas, a great place to go for conventions when we're not in a pandemic, and that is where they are headed." To infiltrate, because that is where the villains are selling their wares. And so he dresses up as Arnim Zola, who I had completely forgotten about. Like I vaguely remember Arnim Zola from as the computer, the wall of computers in Captain America the Winter Soldier. But, mm-hmm. I completely forgot what he looked like in the comics. It's been so long. And Tony is dressed up as a Hydra, random Hydra soldier. And
there's another great line here where they're talking about the device that's going to be auctioned off, and MODOK is explaining how this works. You know, that they sell off they auction off the weaponry so they can actually make more money. And Tony goes, "But that's what I made, what you sell for me, it's not a weapon." And MODOK goes, "And a kitchen knife is just cutlery until you plunge it into someone's chest."
Yeah, that's a great line.
I know, right? I was like, "Holy shit!"
Yep, and accurate. You know, I think I talked about like the history of the atomic bomb. like no one knew what the result of splitting the atom, you know, could be. They just knew that it was something that needed to be done for the purposes of science, and the splitting of the atom is what leads to one of the most destructive weapons in, you know, the history of man.
Mm-hmm.
So that, you know, smart guys, Blum and Patton. You know, there's a lot of, this is a, as simple as it is and as fun as it is, it's a very layered comic. There's stuff going on here if you look a little deep. The other thing that I noticed, especially with the splash page, is you can tell when something is written by a fan of comics. Like, this isn't just a job. This is a passion project. Because these guys wrote this out, and then an artist came in and did the splash page, and it's like the Wreckers and Yellow Jacket and Mysterio and all these like second and third and fourth tier villains, and there's a lot of really funny like cameos in these pages.
Oh my god, tell me about it. I don't think we've got enough time to look at all the Easter eggs on this thing, but mm-hmm. It is hilarious.
They have the armadillo, who apparently these guys love because he's in the show too, as like a bouncer at the, you know, guard at the front.
Mm-hmm.
I talked over you. You can go ahead.
Oh, I was just saying how much I love the giant sentinel in the background and the giant Hydra displayed. Mm-hmm. Not to mention, it's a minor thing, but I do love how they actually make it look like it's a giant-ass convention. I've been to enough comic book conventions, and I'm sitting there going, yeah, Patton's obviously been to his share as well. He knows what he's doing.
I'm sure. So, I don't know if you've seen the video of, I think it's Clara Pugh, who plays another version of the Black Widow in the upcoming Black Widow movie. They released a clip where she's making fun of the crouch stance that she does. You know, the hero crouch. Have you mm-hmm. seen the clip?
No, I don't think I have, actually. I hate to say, but I've been trying to avoid a lot of the excess clips and whatnot, because I want to go... I always watch the trailers, but when they start playing excess clips and everything from the movies, I try to avoid those.
Yeah, so do I. And for the most part, I do. This one, I wasn't looking for it. It just shows up in my feed, and I can see her. Like I didn't watch the whole clip, but I could see what she was doing, and it made headlines amongst the blogs and whatnot. The reason why I bring it up is there's a panel here where the Iron Man suit crashes through the ceiling into hero pose. And Tony goes, so that's what that looks like.
It's so freaking funny, though. They're basically using the armor as a bribe to get into the convention. Because I guess you can't, like, buy passes or anything. You actually have to offer something of value to the bouncers. So, MODOK said, okay, we're going to just, offer one of your suits. I'm sure, you know, this clearly isn't, like, a World Destroyer suit. It's just, you know, one of your standard Iron Man suits. But then Tony goes, but I love that armor. I once had Ellie McPherson in that armor.
I would, I'm always into, like, behind-the-scenes stuff, and I would love to have been, I would have loved to have heard from an editor when, you know, they submitted a script for this comic, Blum and Patton, and how much of it had to be like, this is funny, guys, but no. You know, how much editing and how much restraint had to be put into the original screenplay of this thing.
Always kind of reminds me of a bit that Patton Oswalt did talking about Halloween and how he used to get high as hell and watch scary movies with his friends on Halloween, but after he did Ratatouille, he realized he couldn't do that because some kid was going to, you know, love Patton Oswalt for voicing their new favorite character from Pixar, and he'd open the door high as a kite and just ruin this kid's life.
That's funny as hell.
So it's kind of, I'm sitting there going, it's like, Patton, we know the kind of humor you have in mind, but we need to take it down a notch, okay?
So there's a lot of MODOK arguing with the voice in his head in this, and as we go through the comic, he separates from Tony and he has some visions, and he's struggling. Now we get to this part where Tony is trying to use subtlety and sort of spy techniques to get the master, what does he call himself? A master of the world, to give up a password that they need to move f- forward into the auction. And of course, you know, much like Richard Pryor in Superman 3, the way to get to the way to someone's heart is through their liver. They're just getting them drunk, like you do.
Yeah, I'm not that familiar with the Master. I know I've heard them talked about, or heard this guy talk about in other books, but I'm not 100% familiar with the character.
MODOK has no patience for, MODOK doesn't have patience for much. But, you know, it works. They get him drunk. MODOK eventually gets pissed off and walks away, and then he starts having visions of his family again, and we get the scene of the daughter who's in the MODOK getup crying, and you know, and MODOK sort of interacting with them, and it's, you know, a very teenager, why doesn't she love me, which, by the way, again, we have apparently this particular character is gay, and so we have good representation here in the comic. You know, didn't need to be there, but it was nice that it was.
Mm-hmm.
And then we flash back to the present out of this hallucination that he's having, and he's killed the Serpent Society, all of them, just mowed them down.
By the way, how terrifying is that panel where MODOK just glitches when the Master is shouting the password? Just that one panel across the whole page showing his face with those glowing eyes.
Yeah,
that nightmare inducing right there.
Yeah, that's rough. So Tony's like, what did you do? And the voice in his head says, they won't hurt you again. And they, you know, Tony's like, you can't kill people. But they move forward. There's an auction of a super adaptoid, and then they get Tony's machine, and they are found out. The jig is up. And so Tony and MODOK have to fight their way through this sea of villains. Tony is able to get into his Iron Man armor from the earlier in the issue. And, of course, they do the superhero pose. He says, let's do this. And there are a bunch of little MODOKs around. And then they are, you know, thankfully, this isn't page after page after page of fighting. They just fast forward 18 hours later, and they are back in the lab. And so Tony says to him, I've traced the coding origins behind these quote-unquote memories. They aren't new. In fact, the program is ancient, dating all the way back to the original MODOK with a C experiment that turned George Carlin into, well, you. If you want answers, you have to go back to where it all happened, back to Boca Caliente. And then we flash over to Monica, who hires Gwenpool, who I guess has killed MODOK before in a previous iteration of some comic or other, and wants her to do so again. And so my question to you is this. I know nothing about this character. Have you read any Gwenpool?
No, I have not. I enjoy Deadpool, but as anyone who frequents the comic book conventions will tell you, he, much like Harley Quinn, is very overexposed.
Mm-hmm.
I get a lot of little kids asking for Deadpool pins, and I'm sitting there going, thinking to myself, I refuse to believe for even one nanosecond you have actually read a Deadpool book. Otherwise, I think I'm going to have a talk with your parents.
Nice. Before we jump into issue number 3 here, I want to take a pause for the cause. And as we were talking earlier, pay some bills. Now, I often say on these podcasts or some such other that these writers could use Grammarly to improve their comic. Now, I don't think there was much that needed to happen here to improve this, but one should look into Grammarly anyway. Grammarly's AI-powered products help people communicate more effectively. Grammarly helps you write mistake-free on Gmail, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, and nearly anywhere else you write on the web. Grammarly corrects hundreds of grammar, punctuation, and spelling mistakes while also catching contextual errors, improving your vocabulary, and suggesting style improvement. To download Grammarly today, go to getgrammarly.com/WTM network. That's getgrammarly.com/WTM network to download Grammarly for free. Alrighty, issue number 3 of Head Games. Remember that song? Head Games.
How old do you think I am?
Old enough to remember that song. I mean, on like an oldie station or something. Maybe like a parent played it, or you were in the car with your aunt and uncle, and they had it on. I mean, it, you know, it's a popular enough song.
Sorry, don't know it.
Ugh. All right, so we start in We start in what is it? Krakatoa? Krakoa?
It depends on where you're putting the emphasis. I've heard Krakoa. I've heard Krakoa. I don't know. It's probably where Emma Frost is holding the Hellfire Gala in the currently running X-Men series.
Perfect. Anywho, so we start off with Gwenpool. All right, actually, before we get into this, back to your experience at cons. So, I know Deadpool's super popular. How much cosplaying, how much popularity is there for Gwenpool? Who I guess is some amalgamation of Deadpool and Gwen Stacy.
There actually is none for Gwenpool. As strange as that sounds. I see a ton of... I actually see more female versions of Deadpool. Just gender swap Deadpool than I do of Gwenpool. I guess I never really got into it because I looked at it and I thought, well, when they created Spider-Gwen, it was an interesting concept of what if the roles were switched between Peter Parker and Gwen Stacy on that night when, in the story we know, she died. Mm-hmm. When I looked at this in Gwenpool, I thought, okay, somebody's obviously just having, you know, a little too much free time on their hands.
Well, there, and this is a major complaint. We can take a minute and talk about this, if you don't mind. There's a major complaint amongst our circle of friends, and I'm sure the greater circle of comic book readers, that gender and or race and or sexual orientation swapping a character just to do it, just for the sake of inclusion with no other rhyme or reason behind it, sucks, and they don't like it.
I'm not going to name names, but we had somebody recently when they announced the cast for the upcoming Neil Gaiman work, and they announced that they were going to be doing Joanna Constantine instead of John Constantine. One of our coworkers, again, not naming names, flipped out because they didn't realize that Joanna Constantine is a previously established character from another timeline. She's an ancestor of the John Constantine that we all know. He thought it was a gender swap Constantine, and he lost his mind.
It's such a weird thing because it's not like this is new, and I brought this up with the She-Hulk. I can't remember what somebody got set off a while back about some sort of switched hero and was like, why do they have to keep doing this? Inclusion for inclusion's sake is empty and meaningless and doesn't sell books, which is the most important thing. And the argument of it doesn't sell books, I'll accept that as an argument. If Marvel and DC make these decisions to do X, Y, Z, and it doesn't result in widening the circle of people reading comic books and selling more books that way, then it's mission not accomplished. You're not doing anything to grow your industry at all. But the concept in and of itself, I think, is sound, because I mean, what is She-Hulk but not a gender swapped Hulk? I mean, granted, it's a new character, but all, you know, they gave Jennifer Walters a backstory, and this was my argument at the time. They gave her a backstory. She had a legacy all her own. She's had stories all her own. She's had, you know, different writers taking on different iterations of the character, and so people like accept She-Hulk now. But you could have gone back in time and said at the time, like, why do we need She-Hulk? We already have a Hulk. Like, why not just create a new character? And you know, there are only so many ideas in Hollywood.
I agree. I actually had this conversation recently too, again, about some of the race and gender swapped characters in the new Neil Gaiman work, to which I said, honestly, I can't really complain until I see, you know, it's like, as far as movies and TV shows, as long as they picked a good actor, I can't complain. Mm-hmm. I mean, they switched out, in the comic books, Heimdall wasn't black, but they switched it, and we got freaking Idris Elba in the MCU.
I also don't think anyone complained about that. It's weird the fights that the comic fans will pick. You know, I don't know how much complaining there was about Ms. Marvel, you know, who was a Muslim character. I don't know how much complaining there was about Sam Wilson as the Falcon. It almost seems to be like almost like a pro wrestling thing. Like, if there's a determination amongst the vast majority of fans that the character has paid dues and has a legacy, they're willing to accept it. But if it just sort of happens out of the clear blue sky, I think another one that people got all up in arms about was Amadeus Cho as a Hulk. And there was a point where they were making everybody into a Hulk, which funny enough, leads back to something I was talking about before, Hulked Out Heroes, where they literally turned the entire Marvel Universe into Hulks at one point.
Yeah.
Rick Jones. Rick Jones was a Hulk at one point. I think it was like A-Bomb. He was a Hulk. General Ross was a Hulk. Betty was a Hulk. You know, the Hulk had a kid, had a wife. The Hulk had a son from another planet. You know, for a while there were a lot of Hulks. And then they did an entire series where, you know, the Hulk was Doc Green, and he was running around depowering all of them. But, you know, just to kind of round this back to Gwenpool, one could make the argument that this is a silly character made up of, you know, two different iterations of a thing. Just as a cheap ploy to sell books. I don't know. I don't know how well her books sell, you know? And that's why I was asking, like, is this a seemingly popular character among the con people?
I guess I looked at it and I guess I just look at it and I feel that there's no need for it to be Gwen Stacy as Deadpool. I feel that that's trying too hard to cash in on the popularity of Spider-Gwen, even down to giving her the same pink-colored outfit.
Right.
I have no problem with writing a new version of Deadpool that was actually a female.
I know at some point there have been, like, Deadpool had a whole family at one point.
Oh, yeah, there's been Lady Deadpools. In fact, this kind of comes up with the new Loki series that's coming out. They have confirmed that Loki is gender fluid. We talked about in our recent review of The God Who Fell to Earth.
Which was coming up this week.
Yeah, coming out soon, where there are multiple moments where Loki's actually transformed into a woman, and he has no qualms about this. This actually kind of comes back to the earlier mythos of the trickster god. Trickster gods were often gender fluid and would become male or female, saying, you know, depending on what they needed to do to, you know, do their job. It's actually very similar to Loki. Loki in classic Norse mythology could shift between man and woman. There was no, you know, it wasn't a case of Loki's trans. Is like, no, this is just trickster god 101. It's what they do.
Yeah, I mean, look, Mystique being a shapeshifter has been men, women, cat, and dog. I don't know if you've ever seen Star Trek V. I don't know if Star Trek's a thing of yours, but there's a shapeshifter character in that's all over the place, and, you know, being different things. So, you know.
Yeah, like, I have no problem with the idea of a character of Lady Deadpool becoming more prominent. I felt that Gwenpool was lazy because it was essentially trying to convince people, look, this is like Gwen Stacy, this is like Spider-Gwen. That part got it just annoyed me. You know, it's like, you want to have a female Deadpool, fine. Don't try to sucker people in by saying, oh, look, it's just like our other popular character. And she's also pink.
You know, I've talked about this recently with Chris Bailey, that the comic book industry and the wrestling industry are both kind of suffering from, you know, they're just bleeding fans left and right. And we don't need to get into why, but it is a fact. Less people now read comics more than they did 10, 20 years ago. There are less wrestling fans than there were 10, 20 years ago. And I think in both cases, even more so with comics, the big publishers, I don't think they know what to do. I think they just kind of throw shit at the wall, you know, and I think a lot of it is, well, this is popular and this is popular. Surely it'll be popular if we throw them together. You know, and that's as much thought as gets put into this. And then it's up to the writers to kind of figure out how to take, you know, this possibly sales-inducing idea and turn it into something someone might actually want to read. And speaking of things people might want to read, so, I've never read much Gwenpool. I've read a couple of different Deadpool things in the course of doing this show. Deadpool's not a character I give a shit about either. But, hey, he has movies, his books are popular. Occasionally, he's in something I actually want to read, so I am aware of what he is and what he does, and she's doing the same bit here, It's literally a girl in a pink costume doing the Deadpool shtick of breaking the fourth wall and acknowledging this is, in fact, a comic book. And cynicism aside, I thought this was funny. I guess, is that Dazzler she's talking to?
I have absolutely no idea.
Okay. She's talking to some blonde woman in a jacket, which I don't know what they're referencing here. There's a whole point I brought this up. There's a panel here where it's set up this way. I thought you gave up being a mercenary. Fine. You got me, Skids. Okay, is that the name of the character? Is that a nickname she gave her?
No, apparently her name is... It says her name is Jordan White. Oh, no, or is that the... No, Jordan White's a writer. He's a senior editor at X-Men Comics. So I have absolutely no idea. You know what? I'm willing to bet... I am seriously willing to put money on this, that this was originally Deadpool who was doing this, and... Someone at Marvel basically said, well, we can't put Deadpool in this book because, I don't know, maybe because another writer is working on something else with him and, you know, we can't, you know, have him appear in this. Or maybe, I don't know, maybe there was some legal issue why it couldn't do it. And the writers were like, but we have this awesome bit where she literally copies and pastes and redoes the comic and we can't do that with anyone else. And someone said, well, you could always use Gwenpool, and they literally just threw her in for that.
All right, so there is a Skids character. I looked it up. Skids, Sally Blevins, is a fictional mutant character appearing in Marvel Comics, and then they have a whole biography. I'm not reading through all of this, but they do talk about her being in S.H.I.E.L.D. and what and being in the X-Men and whatnot. She was voiced by Kara Strong in an X-Men cartoon called No Mutant is an Island. Books that she's been in. She's been in X-Factor in the 80s. She's been in New Mutants. She's been in X-Force. She's been in X-Men. And she's been in Uncanny X-Men in 2007. So I guess that's who she's talking to. Doesn't say anything about MODOK. But that's fine.
And honestly, she doesn't appear again, so... Truth is, this is essentially just some admin person on the island.
Yeah. And so there's this whole bit here where she goes, but weren't you like... This is why I thought it was Dazzler, by the way. But weren't you once like a Madonna pastiche? And then she goes, X-Factor, number 7, volume 1. And then there's Jordan, don't do this bit, White. So again, and this goes on and on and on and on. And this is very self-referential. And the other really funny thing is as this goes on, the box that references the comics that she's been in gets bigger and bigger and unwieldy.
Yeah, I do kind of like that. Again, I occasionally do like it when Deadpool would break the fourth wall and literally pull stuff out of the panels. Mm-hmm. That kind of bit always did make me laugh a little bit. And it is sort of funny that she basically is holding them and it gets bigger and she freaking hands it to Skids.
Yeah. So this gives her a clue as to where to go next. And then we have MODOK here in Boca Caliente. And he runs afoul of various mutated monsters that have been turned into animals that have been turned into MODOKs.
I'm guessing these were the early experiments before they shoved a human in the microwave.
Yeah, something like that. And then I'll tell you, I really did enjoy this. This is the least of the four issues. This is my least favorite because at some point the joke is old and it's beating a dead horse. And this is what I mean by that. If this be Gwenpool, that's a joke. Welcome to Gwenpool. Hope you survive the Gwenpool. And it's like, I get it. You're doing Marvel bits. You know, these are things taken from Marvel Comics. We get it. Yikes. Move on. Speaking of moving on, she says, the last time I killed you, I launched your evil hover hiney into space, and that was for free. This time, an unhinged AIM lady is paying me. Imagine what I can do when I'm monetarily incentivized. Now, I laughed at that line.
Yeah.
That's funny. But this other shit, this self-referential stuff that is commonplace for a Deadpool-type character to do, I was like, boo. By the way, no editor's note as to when this occurred. I have no idea. Maybe it was War of the Realms. Maybe it was something else. War of the Realms gets referenced at some point. But I have no idea when the hell this Gwenpool killed MODOK or when he came back to life.
I have absolutely no idea.
Yep.
But again, I don't really follow Gwenpool, so...
Who knows? All right, so they're fighting. There's a lot of action in this book. And then she cuts him in half with the sword. And when she does so... I can't decide if I like this or not. Because here we get... this whole next bit is self-referential. It's very meta. She sees the visions that come out of his eviscerated head. And she sees the family. And she goes, "A family. They're humanizing you. This is your book. And I'm just the guest star. And I killed you." Come on, true believers. And then it just goes on and on and on. And she's like, I can fix it. And like Bugs Bunny and Duck Amuck, she's at the drawing table fixing it. And it just goes on and on and on. And finally, she brings him back to life through the power of comic book being rewritten.
Yeah. That.
This was a long way to go for what is essentially a gag. And I guess if the idea is, who knows what the original script called for, but I guess if the idea is we want to sell more books, somehow shove Gwenpool in there. I see it, but it's like, but this was not cringe inducing, but this was definitely like, uh-huh. Of all the creative things you've done with this four-part series, this was the least creative.
I thought it was a little funny, but it does go on way, way, way too long. I feel like it would have just been better if they had had her pull out a remote and do a rewind or something.
So she brings him back to life, and she gives him an address in Ohio. She says that there's the next place to go. So this ultimately leads to her giving him the next clue in the mystery. And the stinger at the end of the book is he goes to the house and he sees a beekeeper keeping bees. And he takes off his helmet and says, "I am your father. You're welcome home, George. You found your family, just not the one you were looking for. To be continued." Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah, I go by so many names. The founder. AIM Agent 001, Alvin Tarleton.
So issue number 4, we get to the glorious conclusion. So we get a dialogue, an exposition dump here, where he explains, "You see, George, no matter how much love we put into our children, they always end up rejecting us. But you were lashing out only because you were hurting. Now you're home and I can take that pain away." But he gives a password. And we start to see a flashback where the scientist is experimenting, and then the Avengers show up, and then they are converted into images of his family. They are, you know, Iron Man, Thor, and Captain America are turned into Jody Liu, and I can't remember the daughter's name. Okay, and so here he says, "Are you ready to listen? Good. Then let's start at the beginning. I once looked out and saw a world imprisoned by religion and politics, and a world that demanded sovereignty through science." It's a little agenda-ish, but okay. "A world that needed aim. A world I quickly realized you had no place in. I tried to give you purpose, but it was never enough. So like all good engineers, I improved upon your initial design. I gave you a chance to stake your claim in the bright future I was building. But instead of getting honey, I got stung. Forced to flee and hide in exile until now. But I forgive you, George. The flaw was never in my design. It runs much deeper." And then when you rewrote your own core functions from computing to killing, I thought I'd lost you forever. But the damage you sustained a week ago restored old failsafes, allowing me to monitor and your movements and steer you back to me." And so he says, "But the memory is Jody," and he's like, "Nah, it's all crap." And so MODOK lashes out. He screams, "I was your son," and as it turns out, this is the town from Eureka. You ever watch Eureka?
No, I don't.
Do you know what Eureka was?
I think so. Wasn't it kind of a like a subtle thing, at, like very similar to Twin Peaks?
Eureka was a sci-fi show about an entire town that revolves around a company that creates scientific inventions and endeavors. So everyone that lives in the town of Eureka works for this company in some scientific capacity. And the sheriff has died or retired or something. And so a new, I think it's like a U.S. Marshal moves to the town to become the new sheriff. And the whole show revolves around mysteries, detective mysteries involving science. That's the concept. It was a really good show. Of the few shows I've ever watched on sci-fi, this is probably the best one I've ever seen. Until Resident Alien, plug. Go back and check out our review of that. But that's what this is. This is a bunch of excommunicated AIM scientists who have founded this town and live there so that they can do science in peace. And then they are protected by, oh gosh, what were the things called again? The robots? They had a specific name. They were in the previous issue.
Super Adaptoids.
Yes. They are protected by a bunch of super Adaptoids. And so, the punchy part. Here we go. A bunch of Super Adaptoids jump on MODOK. And this is where he explains all of what I just said. And we get a weird flashback to him talking to Jody, which seemed out of place.
You know, eventually you're going to have to start giving your son a dollar every time you use the line, "Let's get to the punchy part."
Well, I'm not wrong.
But wasn't he the one who coined that phrase?
Nope, that was Alan Tudyk in Doom Patrol.
Oh.
That's where I stole that from.
Okay, fine. You have to start giving Alan Tudyk a dollar.
He doesn't need my money. He gets Hollywood work. All right, so the Super Adaptoids overwhelm MODOK, and they strap him in a chair, and they're going to do stuff to him. And
this scene is so weird that they're talking about all the weapons he had on him, and they point out that he had a cell phone, and they're just like, you know, like he's a supercomputer. Why does he need a cell phone? I'm guessing that would be the same as somebody having a regular smartphone, and then you find that they've got a freaking like old fashioned calculator in their pocket. It's like, why do you have this?
Right. He doesn't need a cell phone, but he's got one. It's a really bizarre thing. And so his father says, "Time to fulfill that destiny. Goodbye, George." MODOK says, "No, a monster that dreamed, and now they've come to take that away. Erase every part of me." And you see like the machines from the Matrix start blowing up parts of his circuitry. The boy, the machine, the monster. But MODOK turns it all around on him and kills everybody in the room, including all the Super Adaptoids. And this is the reference to the War of the Realms. "During the War of the Realms, I acquired Rohirrim, the same metal that powers Thor's hammer. Uru is known for being nearly indestructible, incredibly hyperconductive, and its ability to return to whoever wields it, no matter what stands between them." And so this character gets pretty messed up, and he says, "Metal of the gods? Barely deserving to be MODOK's cell phone case."
Yeah, this is the part that I thought was just so freaking weird, that it turns out that he basically turned his phone into a mini Mjolnir and uses it to fly through all of the bad guys, actually in a very similar scene to the first Guardians of the Galaxy when Yondu gets his arrow to fly through all the Kree soldiers.
Right. So he takes him out, kills him, and says, "Science will indeed lead us to a new world. It's a shame you have no place in it. Goodbye, Alvin." And he traps Alvin in the cell phone. And so MODOK has gotten his revenge. And with that, he goes back to AIM headquarters, and he shows up, and he sees Monica and the Taskmaster and all these AIM people. And he says, "MODOK never compromises." And so he's built a bunch of Super Adaptoids that look like his family, and they rush the table, and that's where our story ends. Let me say this, and I'll give you the last word, and we'll get out of here. Other than the Gwenpool stuff, which, you know, was kind of, it was more just kind of groan-inducing than anything else. I really enjoyed this. I laughed hard at some parts. I enjoy Patton Oswalt's sense of humor. I thought it was a fairly simple enough story that I could follow, and I enjoyed reading it. And it makes a nice companion piece to the show, which we're going to talk about tomorrow.
It was pretty funny. I'll admit that I think I preferred the previous MODOK book that we reviewed not too long ago.
Yes, MODOK Assassin from the Secret Wars.
Yeah. Scene. Yeah, I think I enjoyed that one a little bit more. And maybe it is the whole Gwenpool thing that tipped me over into that decision. But this is still a very funny book. And if you're a fan of Patton Oswalt's writing, or you're a fan of the character MODOK, or if you're a fan of the show, I think you'll like this.
All right. That wraps up our review of MODOK Head Games by Patton Oswalt. Patton Oswalt has written a couple of different things. I'd like to check out more of his stuff. Maybe, you know, in the future, you and I can do more of that. He did JLA, Welcome to the Working Week. That sounds hilarious. He did a Serenity book, and he did something called The Goon Noir. So, and I'm sure there's more here, but the site that I'm looking at, that's what came up when I clicked on his name. So we'll have to check out. I know that, I think there was a sequel to this that came out. Let me see. I'll have to look. But I think there was another one similar to Head Games that came out not too long after, which might be fun to take a look at. So we'll see. In the meantime, other stuff we are definitely doing. We just wrapped up an interview with Glenn Miller, who directed the Zombies trilogy that's in the archives. Yesterday was the big Floyd Mayweather-Logan Paul fight. Our alternative commentary is up in the archives, plus all the Disney stuff we did last week related to Cruella and 101 Dalmatians, plus our review of A Quiet Place and AEW Double or Nothing. This week, we've got reviews of Lucifer Season 5B, which you will be on as well, plus, as we've been saying, the Marvel MODOK series. My son insisted we do a commentary for the movie Ready Player One. The review from when it came out a few years back is already in the archives, but I'm going to sit and watch it with my son tonight, and I'll have him yell and scream at the television. That's always a fun listen. June 9th, Loki on Disney Plus comes out. To celebrate that momentous occasion, Alexis and I will review Loki, the God Who Fell to Earth. That'll air the same day. Later on in the evening, myself and Robert Winfrey will review yet another Simpsons-inspired metal band, this time stoner sludge metal Australians Dr. Colossus and their album I'm a Stupid Moron with an Ugly Face and a Big Butt, and My Butt Smells, and I like to kiss my own butt. I never get tired of saying that.
I was going to say, I think you're having too much fun saying that album.
Alexis, this is all Alexis all the time this week. She and Sean Comer will be doing one of the wish list items that we've been talking about for a while, and we're finally getting to it. We're doing a comic strip for The Judas Contract. We will watch the animated feature, we will read the book, and we will talk about it. And then this being Pride Week, DC Comics put out a one-shot. They'll be putting it out tomorrow, June 8th, as a matter of fact. DC Pride number one. It's an anthology featuring the LGBTQ comics community of characters. So myself, Sean Comer, and Alexis Haino will review that. We'll have a re-airing of our Dawn of the Planet of the Apes review from a few years back. And myself and Pat Mullen, in theory, will discuss the first half of the Dark Side of the Ring Volume 3, which covers the Ultimate Warrior, the Dynamite Kid, the Grizzly Smith Family, Collision in Korea, Nick Gage, and Brian Pillman. All right, that's all my plugs. You can do your plugs and take me home, baby doll.
Ugh, Mark's bleeding me dry, folks. Send help. Or send drugs. Whichever is easier.
It's definitely send drugs. Drugs are fun.
Yes, they are. No, seriously, folks, don't do drugs. What are these days, you know, all my jokes about how I need coke to get through jujitsu is going to come back and bite us in the ass. You know.
That's funny.
Oh, All right. So, yes, in addition to all these other shows that Mark has got me doing because I can't say no to this man, God help me, we will also be doing our next episode of Tripped Up Trivia, which we're going to be recording on the 19th. The theme is female superheroes. We just got a bunch of new contestants who are going to be joining us, including a handful of fellow podcasters from MCU's Through the Bleeding Edge. I just guested with them discussing the first Iron Man movie. This was my first ever live stream event as opposed to just audio through a podcast. Had a lot of fun. These were wonderful people. We had so much fun talking about the movie. Can't wait to record with them again. A handful of them are going to be joining us for Tripped Up Trivia. Don't forget that when we record in July, our next theme is going to be Warner Brothers Animation. This is to tie into the next Space Jam movie coming out. And, of course, we're always looking for contestants for those future episodes. If you are interested in playing Tripped Up Trivia, hit us up on Facebook or Twitter. Let us know. Now I should probably actually plug my company so I can pay my bills because Mark doesn't pay me.
I pay you in comic books.
Comic books don't work when you send them over to the electric company, okay?
Have you tried?
Yes, I have, okay? Well, you copy of Jitsu. Did you think I wanted to keep it?
I brought you a box of comics. But we'd like money here.
All right, yes, Honeysuckle Rose Creations, the intersection of geek and chic.
Picturing you running like a crackhead, running across the street with a VCR in your hands. I caught this VCR! Ma'am, it's 2021, and we like money here at the electric company.
You know, when I worked a convention, ironically in Las Vegas, as we were talking about cons out there before, I had a gentleman who wanted to buy a handful of pins and asked if I took cards, and I said, of course I take cards. And as I grab the square reader, he whips out a binder full of Yu-Gi-Oh cards.
I was going to say, he tried to pay you in magic cards or something?
Yeah, Yu-Gi-Oh cards.
Nice.
Yeah, and I'm just staring, I'm like, I literally was like 2 minutes of us just staring at each other with me thinking, waiting for the shoe to drop. He's joking. Oh God, he's not joking.
That's hilarious.
But yes, speaking of conventions, we're back on the road, folks. We are vaccinated, and we are heading to Kansas City Crypticon. This is a horror convention. So excited to be going there. We're actually working on some fun items that are going to be available there, including we're bringing back the custom charm station. Yay! So happy! I finally get to go back to work. And of course, you can always find our stuff on Etsy and handmade at Amazon.
Hey, speaking of Amazon, before we go, before I was singing that old Foreigner song that everyone knows and loves, including Alexis Haina, whether she realizes it or not, Head Games, which comes from the album Head Games that was first dropped on September 10th of 1979 from Atlantic Records. Well, hot diggity, if you heard me sing Head Games and was like, oh my God, what's that song? I gotta hear it now. You should click the link in our description for amazonmusic.com/W2M network. You click on the link, you fill out the information, you get yourself a free 30 days of Amazon Music, and then you can be like me, Mark, jukebox hero, Rattledge. Melissa, am I a jukebox hero?
You are.
She says I am. Good woman. That's right. You want to be like me, jukebox hero, Mark Rattledge, and get your Foreigner on. And who doesn't? Do you like Foreigner, Alexis? I don't need to wait for an answer. I know you do. You can be an... Wait, that's... I almost did Owner of a Lonely Heart, and that's yes. You can carry on my wayward son. Nope, that's Kansas. Other Foreigner songs. You could be a dirty white boy. Yeah. You could be a dirty white boy having those Head Games and messing with them women. And you could have Love on the Telephone. These are all Foreigner songs. You can check out that album using our link to amazonmusic.com and stream a free 30 days of music. All the music you could ever want. You could listen to Foreigner. You could listen to Journey. You could listen to Kansas. You could listen to Yes. Do you like Yes, Alexis Haina? I know you do, because apparently I think you're a 50-year-old woman. So why not get into all the arena rock that we all know and love? play you some Def Leppard and Whitesnake like my kids like, because I'm a good parent and I got them into the best music. You could get Slippery When Wet with Bon Jovi. It's all there. You're living on a prayer with AmazonMusic.com/W2M Network. Click the link, gives us a little cheddar to keep the gears rolling on this podcast, and you get all the free music you can have for 30 days. You don't like it, you discontinue the service, no fuss, no muss. But if you love it like I do, you keep it, and you keep streaming the music. Don't we all love a nice little soundtrack to our life, Alexis Haina?
You proud of yourself for that?
I really am. That might be the best plug I've ever done.
It probably is.
It's not getting any better than that. So for Alexis Haina, I'm Mark Rattledge. Thanks for joining us on a review of MODOK Head Games by Patton Oswalt. Be well, be safe, and behave.